This is Bird Deming, along with our virtual fictitious assistant,
that would be me,
at fairandunbalanced.com, in association with Mad Mike's America, discussing ex post facto voting rights. The Republic of Ancient Rome was not something we would regard as a republic today.
90% of Rome was prohibited from voting.
The Roman Senate was chosen by the elites, those of great wealth. There were proposals to begin a limited inclusion of that 90%, the plebeians. This was widely thought to be, well, controversial. Limited is an understatement. Largely ceremonial positions with circumscribed powers didn't satisfy much of anyone. A plot led by Lucius Sergius Catilina was formed to overthrow the entire messy government. Catilina is a fascinating fellow.
He was partly an accused OJ-style killer. His wife, son, and by then ex-brother-in-law were murdered.
But later he became somewhat of a social reformer. With economic plans, the elites thwarted. The plot involved a lot of bloodletting among ruling senators. Eventually, several thousand supporters of the conspiracy were killed in battle with Catilina. A dictator was named to uncover and punish anyone who was involved. Informers were encouraged to bring accusations. If anyone's loyalty was in doubt, laws were passed to cover the accusations. Those accused retroactively were executed, and their estates went to the government. The informers got a percentage of the confiscated estates.
Think of it as McCarthyism on commission.
Romans were pretty good at record keeping. The names of the informers were duly filed away. When those who were allowed to vote for senators got a little antsy about fellow members of the elite being accused, killed, and their families left penniless, they kind of turned on the idea of killing and confiscation. So new laws were invented, and many of the informers were accused and executed.
Pac-Man law.
Eventually, the whole idea of retroactive laws had lost its appeal. Ex post facto came to possess a negative connotation. That's not to say the practice stopped. After Julius Caesar was assassinated by those who thought Romans would celebrate, the entire edifice of the elitist republic went into decline. Emperors took over, and often the wealthy were targeted for new crimes that were applied retroactively. Old crimes, for which penalties had already been paid, were also re-prosecuted. New punishment for old crimes included execution and confiscation of wealth.
Had to keep each new Caesar living in style.
The practice of inventing new laws or revamping old laws with new penalties, then applying everything retroactively, survived the empire. Ex post facto laws were applied to pretty much anyone that royalty didn't like. Retroactive punishment in England was often used to prosecute Catholics, then Protestants, then Catholics. After the American Revolution, ex post facto laws took another turn. Those who had not supported the revolution were targeted for retribution. That bothered those gathered to form a new constitution. They were also a little bothered by old, settled violations with newly invented punishments.
What bothered them even more was the effect on money.
Lots of people owed money to people in other states. It was part of doing business.
I buy from you, I owe you the money, and I am required to pay it.
But since a lot of folks from other states were owed the money, individual states made it easy to help those who owed screw over those who were owed. They did it with ex post facto laws. In South Carolina, for example, those who owned lots of worthless land that nothing would grow on were allowed to use it to pay off debts.
Since I owe you $10,000 and I don't want to pay you in cash, I'll give you an acre of land worth $10,000.
So, delegates put two clauses directly in the Constitution. One said Congress cannot pass laws and punishments retroactively. The other said no state could pass anything retroactively. The punishment part applies to basic rights. A law cannot take your property or fine you for some offense that was not an offense before the law was passed. And a law cannot be revised to increase the punishment on violations that happened before the law was revised.
Remember that $10 traffic fine you paid last year? It's now $10,000 or 10,000 days in prison. See you in 30 years.
But the punishment part does not apply to privileges that are not rights. A new law can take away your license to drive if you have been legally blind since that firecracker accident. Driving is considered a privilege, not a right. How is voting affected? In 2008, Kelly Jo Griffin had been convicted of using drugs. She served her sentence and decided to turn her life around. she was correctly told that she could vote. In 2011, the Republican governor of Iowa put in a new policy. Those who were convicted of serious crimes could never, ever vote again.
It was not a law, exactly.
Although laws are in effect concerning some felonies and vague, infamous crimes.
He just put in an executive order.
There was no effort to notify those who might register. Last year, Kelly Jo Griffin registered to vote. She took her two kids along so they could see good citizenship in action. She was later arrested for voting. The governor not only issued the executive order, he had also launched a criminal investigation to put in jail anyone with a record who had later voted. Griffin was one of those who had voted without knowing about the executive order. She was offered a plea bargain that would have spared her for more jail time. She turned it down. A jury decided the accusation was unfair and found her innocent.
Should the executive order have been issued to begin with?
To those who believe voting is a right, the answer is obvious. Rights are not to be taken away by executive order. Those who think of voting as a privilege that must be earned, a privilege always subject to proof, see it another way. Only the privileged may vote. This is Bird Deming, along with our virtual fictitious assistant.
That would be me.
At fairandunbalanced.com, in association with Mad Mike's America.